Welcome to the podcast!
Come be part of the conversations that happen around my kitchen table.
He's John Branion, and he's been a stand-up comic for more than 30 years.
She's Amanda McKinney, and she's been my daughter for her whole life.
Our family believes laughter is a gift from God. We often discover it while discussing culture, faith, and family.
So go ahead and pull up a chair, neighbor. Can I call you Carl? There's plenty of room here for you. Welcome to the table, Carl. It was raining for a big chunk of this week, but the sun finally came out and it warmed up. And
gorgeous.
Threw some discs today, and it's everybody feels great
today. No, now we're tired.
We're a little tired, but we feel great and tired.
Got a full, 16 holes in.
Got 16 holes in. We could have, why not 18, you ask? Because there was a family. There was a family of noobs in front of us.
A giant. It was like seven of them.
It was like seven people in front of us, and they were like little kids and stuff, and we knew.
They were throwing 8 feet at a time.
Right. They were going to throw the discs less than 10 feet at a time. They were going everywhere, and we just went around them and started like at hole three.
I hear you guys saying that big families have no place in public and that they don't have the right to enjoy a beautiful day like today.
They don't. If you have a big family, you should not go out in public and impede other people's.
What are you doing with those children out playing?
What do you do playing?
At the park.
Bombing. You and your 15-passenger van taking up two spots.
Yeah. No, it really wasn't a big deal. I didn't mind skipping over.
It was cute. It was cute.
Yeah. I mean, good for them. And, It was funny, though, but they were getting ready to tee off, and we were on our way to the third hole to start in front of them. And so we waited for them to tee off. They were getting ready to tee off. And we had to walk in front of them, basically. It was a few yards away, but we had to walk in front of them. And we paused. Joe paused and goes, let's wait for them to throw. And I'm like, oh, let's just go ahead, because it's gonna take a month. And as we cleared, as we got to the other side and they started throwing, their discs were landing exactly where we were standing. Right. So it was the right choice. And they looked like they were having a good time.
Oh, yeah. It's humbling, as we noticed, to look behind you and see a seasoned player.
Yes.
Throwing it within 10 feet that took us three throws.
Yeah, we were taking three throws. The wind was blowing today, and so it was a little tough. But, yeah, there was a guy playing by himself, dragging 150 discs in his cart with him, and he would tee off behind us and literally, like, park it within 7 or 8 feet of the basket on his first throw. And
yeah. We were fishing ours out of the little rivers. And
yeah. We were dinging off trees.
Across the parking lot as it would roll and roll and roll.
That's not why. We don't play disc golf because we're pro level. We do it because it's fun.
We do it for podcast fodder.
Get away from our wives.
On the disc golf show.
If you haven't played disc golf, Carl, you should try it. It's super fun. And your brother has been playing disc golf for upwards of 12 years, and Timothy.
Yeah.
And he's never,
I don't buy it.
He's never actually purchased a disc.
Right.
And so he like finds them in the creeks and lost in the high weeds and stuff.
They all have other people's names
and phone
numbers.
They all have other people's names and phone numbers and contact information.
On them.
And so he decided he was going to go out and buy discs, I think for the first time in his life. And so he bought like a $110 starter pack. And it's like, that's so Tim.
Yeah.
It's so Tim to go buy like the most expensive thing that you can buy to do a disc golf, which doesn't have to cost anything. You can get started for like $3. You can buy discs for $3.
And you can get the three pack for 20, and that's all you really need to play.
So you should do it, Carl. If you haven't played disc golf, take your family. Take 7 or 8 of your family members.
And then you'll understand this podcast every week when we talk about our disc golf adventures.
Well, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm not going to talk about disc golf anymore.
Better get yourself some discs or you're going to just not have any reason to listen to the comedian next door anymore.
I'm sorry, are you bored, Peach?
I don't know. Some of us got left behind today. Some of us didn't know that the rest of us were going to be climbing in a van and going out to the park
to play disc golf.
Till it was already done. Did.
We should probably move on to another subject.
I am pretty proud of knowing when your vehicle was ready for an oil change.
That was uncanny.
He told me about it.
It was uncanny. He goes, aren't you about ready for an oil change? And I, in my usual car knowledge, said, no, you just changed it recently. It can't possibly be time for an oil change. And we went and looked at the sticker, and it needed an oil change at like 83.6 or something like mm-hmm. that. I turned on the car, and it was 83.6. A little over 83.6.
Luke tells me, because so like, he was so proud of himself, I got home from church a little later because we had to drive separately. He tells me the story, and he goes, they just speak to me. That's what he told me about the transmission, I guess, or the oil. However, yeah.
The car has an oil change in it, but for some reason, we weren't able to reset the indicator light. And I'm still puzzled by that, because that shouldn't be, that shouldn't really be difficult.
Those lights are dumb anyway. You have me. You don't need a light.
Well,
I know.
It's funny. It's been saying it's time for an oil change, and I've been looking at it going, you're crazy. It's not time for an oil change yet. But it turns out it was. Now it still says it's time for
an oil change. It wasn't until this morning before you left your house. And then it was time for an oil change by the time you got here.
It's so weird. Yeah, it was like within less than 10 miles.
It was 83,652. So you were 52 miles over. Beyond, which is not bad.
Well, but you actually...
He still remembers. That's the exact number.
You actually don't...
That's not an estimate.
You actually set that at less than what the maximum length of the oil is, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, even if I went 1,000 miles over, it would still be within the length of the...
You'd be okay.
You see what he's doing? He's doing the same thing that everybody does when they think they're going to outsmart themselves by setting their clocks forward.
Yeah.
Same thing. Luke used to do that in high school and college, both, because he was chronically late. So all of his clocks were untrustworthy. All of them. And I had to just learn that as his girlfriend.
That's not exactly what I'm doing here, because I do the same with my own vehicles. What they say you can go and what I actually put are very different.
Right, but then what happens is he calculates in his own head and says, oh, I could even go 1,000 more.
Well, what they say you can go is... absolute crap anyway, but it's big oil.
Why the oil? It seems like the oil company would set it at less so that you would use more oil.
You would think, but they're also competing in advertising, and so if they're on the shelf next to an oil that says you can go this much longer, you're gonna pick
the one that goes longer.
Yeah.
Also, they are incentivized to ruin your oil like system so that when you get a whole new one, then you have to buy an even more expensive kind of oil to maintain it.
It's just true.
It's all conspiratorial.
No.
Don't listen to him.
Does she know what she's talking about?
The Peaches is not the car guru of this podcast.
That is true. Which is why...
The Peaches is not an expert on the vehicle.
Which is why
listen to everything else she has to say.
Ignore her when she talks cars.
I'm now going to go quiet as we finish this episode of the Oil Podcast. Since we moved from disc golf into car oil.
We will now be talking about homeschooling or whatever other boring thing.
Now we're talking. Yeah, ever since Luke joined the regular lineup, we have a lot more disc golf and car maintenance.
Yes.
We had a couple asides, and now we can get into it.
No, it's fine. I'm just making an observation.
Luke's tips on car maintenance are useful and practical and of interest to a wide...
Do you know what else we talk about a lot more since Luke joined?
What?
Comedy.
That's true. That's true.
She was just today asking me if there's too much comedy on my weekly schedule.
Yeah.
Too much comedy?
Well, specifically weekly schedule, because he's now doing the riff session with you and Juwan and Brian once a week. So that's a regular thing on the calendar.
Which we haven't released any of those videos yet.
Which is a webcam thing.
Right. And then he also got hit up this week from a kind of an acquaintance, a comedy buddy, who was like, hey, I want to do some writing with you. I want to write write some stuff together. And so now they're going to also have a virtual meeting this week. And so I just said, just kind of ask.
Is this guy legitimate? Like, can you write with him? Is it helpful to write with him?
It's been on my comedy bucket list to help mentor someone. And we met Curtis at Ileana Camp.
He
opened for us. And he's working hard. He's vastly improving. And he sends me sets sometime to review, and I send him notes. And we have a good, helpful, beneficial relationship.
You may not have to meet once a week.
No. This is a one-time, for now, thing.
See?
He lives like 4 hours away, so it's not like we can do it any other
Carl
way.
Carl can't see my face.
So
I have no problem with working on some comedy with some friends every now and then. No problem at all. I just asked the question, how many of these are we going to put in a given week?
I feel like we've talked about comedy too long. What else do we have to talk about?
Actually, that was an unintentional segue, because I think what we were going to talk about last week and never got to has to do with scheduling and the fact that it's been a regular conversation lately in our household as we're getting ready to add a fifth baby to the...
Not only our household, I'm seeing, but like all the households.
All the households, meaning everyone in our immediate family, which is basically everybody on planet Earth, right? Well, I mean, it's our world. In our world.
Right. Carl, you have scheduling problems and we're here to help you.
Everyone is talking about calendars and how to negotiate as married couples with children and other family obligations. Like, how do we say yes to the right things and say no to the wrong things? But like, not even, we're not talking about how do we say no to drugs here. We're talking how do we say no to good things that just aren't the best things, and how do you determine what those things are? So Luke had like...
And we're going to solve all of those
questions. Oh yeah, just settle in for the next 30 minutes and we'll get you all
straight.
We're
going to knock this out of the park.
But Luke had several questions that spun off of that 2 weeks ago because he was thinking about like...
Do we remember
questions.
Those questions?
Well, he was thinking about a career change at one point.
Oh my stars. Yeah, we're definitely going to nail this in 30 minutes.
I'm about to say it was too convoluted and complicated to even condense down for a single episode. The scheduling thing I feel like is a separate, more manageable topic. Yeah.
Thought that you were mostly worried about not being able to manage your schedule at work. Is that not right?
I thought a career change focused on my strengths versus my current job, which really amplifies a lot of my weaknesses. One of them being self-time management, self-motivation, working alone.
Yeah.
And on things that don't feel that important to me and don't have strong timelines or accountability with. Like, I just don't do them until they absolutely have to be done. And then I don't have any capacity to do things that pop up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm constantly at a deficit of not feeling productive and not feeling like I'm giving my work the hours they're paying me for.
And of course...
And feeling like I have to take some of that home with me because I wasn't productive. Or sometimes I'll take a PTO day and work just to make up for my lack of effort in previous days.
Right.
So all of that was making me think, why am I... I'm not providing... for my employer, because there's so many of my own weaknesses in this job. I need to find a job that amplifies my strengths.
Right. He was
and then I'll be better.
I don't know if that's a scheduling
it's not.
Thing. Maybe it has something to do with scheduling, but it sounds to me like how do you quantify that you've been quote unquote productive? I mean, what makes
Because when I'm at work, I'm writing jokes or I'm writing plans for the loft beds that I'm building or anything else the more interesting than the boring stuff that work would have me do is what my brain starts working on.
Sort of. He's also in a bunch of meetings.
I'm physically there.
And charting. And there's, you're writing a paper that, or a review of a product or
the research project research that was supposed project. To start in January that I'm still not even close to starting yet.
Yeah. So I asked some of those questions too, but of course the main thrust of my argument was you always need to be miserable and do what you're bad at. That was mainly what I was trying to get.
That was what you were trying to convey.
Yeah. I think I hope that came across loud and clear.
Did you pick that up?
Never change careers ever. That was actually what I was kind of
aiming for. It's always worthwhile to self-evaluate on many levels on stuff that you're doing. You self-evaluate with, you know, what sort of husband, what sort of father, what sort of employee, what sort of neighbor, what sort of, you know, how do I treat mankind that I don't know? All of those things are good. But you do need to have some way of evaluating if things at work, and I don't know anything about your job. I mean, I know what your job is, but I don't know the details of it. But if things at work are not being done and it's causing bottlenecks or failures in other places, then that would be something that needs to be addressed. But if there's, but if things are functioning and
that's the problem,
and nothing is on fire,
like there were like 3 months in a row where I didn't report something because I stopped getting the report and then I just forgot about it. Mm-hmm. And it's like nobody knew or cared, and I could continue to not do it the rest of my career and nobody would probably know.
For what it's worth, he has actively received praise and thanks.
Every annual self-evaluation I fill out, I'm like, yeah, I suck at this and I'm not doing very well. And they're like, okay, great. Keep going.
That's because he works with nurses. It's a female dominated industry. And the more self-deprecating you are, the more everybody rises up to cheer for you.
That's not true.
Everybody you're loves awesome. You. You're so great in meetings. You're so funny. Everybody likes working with you. And it's like, okay. I guess that's all I bring to the table.
That's why I'm saying you have to quantify what a success look like.
But that's easy. That's what comes easy to me, is just being the charming, funny guy. But that's not what you pay a person for.
Okay, why not?
So now I'm confused about, do you want to go back to, quote, your strengths and play up to what is easier for you?
It sounds like you're describing your strengths. It sounds like you're living out your strengths every single day. I am very good
on a team where I am not self-directed. I am working towards a common goal with other people, not in an office by myself, updating spreadsheets and...
Well, that may be true, but then the question is, do these spreadsheets need to be updated? if nobody's noticing these reports, then why are we doing them? But that is a lot of reality for a lot of jobs. A lot of jobs, it's like, well, here's the thing that you're supposed to do. Why? Well, because this is what people do when they're in this job. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people in management and up that don't even know what they're doing. And so they don't have any time at all to think about what the people underneath them are doing. And it creates anxiety for people like yourself who are like, well, I feel like I should be accomplishing something.
I do realize that.
And that puts pressure on the managers now because they have to think of something for you to accomplish.
Right. Most people would kill for a job like this because it's good money and apparently nobody cares if you do nothing. So.
I don't think that's true.
One of my suggestions, just a bug I put in his ear, was, is it possible that what you bring to the table is this sense of duty, you know, honor, this sort of, this almost guilt. I would not say guilt would be the thing that you would want, but like you have this self-reflection and, you know, desire to please and to perform well. And if not you, then it's going to be somebody who doesn't need to be filling out the spreadsheets, but isn't even looking for opportunities to improve. They're just going to coast and take the money.
I feel like most people,
right,
if you were to switch spots with me, would have got that research project off the ground, not 4 months late.
Most people?
Yes.
You think so?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
I think you overestimate the competence of other people and you overestimate your own incompetence, which is, in a way, a value to your company because most people are the other way around. Most people evaluate themselves as really awesome and everyone else as slacking or failing in some way.
I'm very good at what I'm interested in and engaged in.
You keep saying that.
But if it doesn't interest me, then I just can't do it.
You keep saying that. But I'm trying to help you see things the way that other people do for a time. Mm-hmm. I don't think you know how weird it is for somebody to actually want to help their boss out. And you're like, I must be failing them. And even though they're saying, we love having you on the team and we're glad and you're fun to work with, you're like, I can't in good conscience continue in this position knowing that I'm failing them. That is not usually the perspective that an employee, especially as time marches on and the, you know, the next generation shows up, everybody overestimates their own contribution and underestimates everyone else's need.
That is true. And I actually have a personal experience that happened this week that I can share. I can't bring up the name of the person that I was speaking with. But this is a person, a lady that I know who is changing jobs. Her last day at her current employer was Friday, and she was sharing with me how excited she is to move forward. She's not upset or discontent with the job that she had, but she's moving now into a government job that has something to do with taking on cases and evaluating people for basically welfare. For they're going to be given medical and food stamps. Food stamps is a big part of it. She evaluates and helps me with food stamps. And she was telling me, now I kept my lips completely shut while she was talking all of it, because I knew this is not the person to talk to about this. I need to go on the podcast and talk to the Peaches and Luke and Carl.
Carl
about
doesn't
it.
Believe it.
Yeah.
Carl has a hard time believing that you didn't say anything directly to the person.
I did not.
I don't have a hard time believing it.
I did not. I know. I have a reputation for being the guy who just says the stuff that he thinks, but I know that the stuff that I think is not, if it's not what other people think, it hits them completely wrong.
No, he just observes and then turns it into a joke and then tells it on stage and everybody's like, that's funny.
That's so right.
Look at the way he exaggerates real life. Isn't that funny?
But her comment to me was she's looking forward to it because she really wants to help people. She really wants to help people. And so I seized on that and turned it over again in my head, not to her. But there was a part of me that immediately went, so you haven't been helping people at your other job? What you've been doing at your other job is of no use to people at all? And that, if I was to ask her, she would probably say, well, no, of course not. Because what we did before, while it wasn't directly related to food stamps, you know, and providing government assistance to needy people, it was still part of a process.
It's a service
that helps people. It was a service. Yeah. It was a service that you rendered for another human being. And what struck me, what I was thinking about, is how the tendency for most people is to go, well, what the ideal thing to do, I mean, there's a hierarchy here of things that are important. And it's not really important to turn a profit and generate, you know, generate sales for this company.
And turn out jobs for people to do.
Yeah, to have jobs for people to do. This is not really a service. But what is a service and what is a good and noble thing is to provide food stamps to people. Now they can buy groceries and they can feed their children. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty naive, short-sighted view of things. Because the fact is, you're providing food for people in that other job. It's just not direct. And it's not the same type of people.
Yeah.
And so, thoughtful people, introspective people, are able to look at what they're doing and evaluate it and go, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Even if the people up above me, the people in management, don't recognize what I'm doing and don't have any idea what to do with me. And that's usually the case. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that you find somebody in a management position who's actually a good manager. And by good manager, I mean being able to ascertain what your assets are.
Yeah.
And that means personnel and equipment.
Yeah.
And go, okay, here's what I have to work with.
Or to see problems.
Here's the best way to employ these workers. Here's my workers. Right. This is the best thing for Luke to do. Most people can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so you talk about your inability to be a self-motivator. That's 90% of people.
Well,
most people don't have a clue what to do with themselves, let alone
Luke
with somebody else.
Kind of like what you said before, what would be productive? If you could walk into your job, log in, and spend 8 solid hours, no lunch break.
That's the thing. I have to log in like 19 times a day because I'll lose focus and my computer will log out. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Speaking of losing focus, just a second.
You have to actively keep yourself logged in or else it logs you out.
Well, it logs you off after like 30 minutes of inactivity. I was like, oh. I've been zoned out for 30 minutes, apparently. Oh,
even if you were data entering 8 solid hours every day with no breaks.
Bathroom breaks.
No, yes, you don't get to go to the bathroom.
You develop a bladder infection.
I would feel so proud.
No, you wouldn't. I don't think you would.
Would you go, that was time well spent? That was exactly
that's what
the way
efficiency
to use my mind and my
That's
creativity.
What God has given me to do. Is that what you would conclude? Or
data entry.
Are you actually there? Does God actually have you in this position? And I don't know. This is a thought experiment. Does he have you there so that you can be the one to kind of say, hey, this position I'm currently in with the job description I currently have and the processes that are being punted to me just to keep me busy, because you're required by law in every hospital to have somebody in his position. Uh-huh. Law requires him to be there. So is it actually God's will for you to be there so that you can help with something other than what software and AI will be doing on its own, you know, in
it's already doing
5-6 years or
it's
less.
Already doing it.
Yeah. Is it, what human contributions are you bringing to the table? And are those things even more valuable than what you've kind of been taught to believe, uninterrupted, you know, spreadsheet organizing?
I got my coworker a little cat potted aloe plant for her birthday.
Yeah, he did bring an aloe plant for his friend.
Right.
And he's keeping it alive because she hasn't been in.
That will make her smile.
Since then. Yeah, she hasn't even seen it yet. So here was another question I had. And I'm going to have to give a little bit of context.
Is there any value to raising morale for your fellow?
Yes, or something else. Maybe it's another job, but it's not the job that the hospital even realizes it needs him to do yet, perhaps. Right. Here's another question. And setting this up, I want to say that lately Luke has been on a big kick of, hey, all the women need to stay home and raise their own babies.
Mm-hmm. That is not a kick. That is truth.
He's real gung-ho about it.
One of the things about Luke is he's pretty sure of himself he makes up his mind
about
things.
I'm getting bolder about it, and then Mandy told me I need to stop. Because
No, I didn't. Don't say I told you right that you need
did.
To stop.
I texted my coworker who lost her job, and I said, this is good. Stay home and raise those cute kids.
I didn't say that was wrong. I just said you have no context for what sorts of things they're going to run into.
Yes.
And I just realized.
You said stop telling women to stay home.
She said the same sort of thing to me.
Because
many times.
If they don't have the same philosophy that we do, they'll be bitter and blame you.
Yes,
you said.
That I did say that. But
do you
don't
see
have
that
to
that's
stop.
True?
You don't have to stop if you don't mind being... having bitter women.
If you don't mind having everybody be mad at you for their failures,
no,
then.
But listen, this is important. I just realized the connection here because you want to be able to go and work on a team and be told exactly what to do and be an employee.
It's hard because I work with all women and that's hard to tell them all.
Focus. Focus. I'm making a point here. How?
It's too many for one guy.
Luke.
I could tell already he was off track.
How do you expect the women to stay home and manage their own homes and manage their own time and feel productive and have any context for how to be productive at home on their own when you're struggling with
it
and you can't figure out how to find a sense of purpose
because
in your office?
Everyone else is better than me.
I do think you have a sense of that. I do think that's right. Kind of your assumption.
I think so too.
But honestly, sending those women home, in most cases, they are going to be as aimless and fearful and feeling purposeless as you do. And that is why they go.
All my time with these crazy kids and they're.
I need to send these kids to daycare. Somebody else is better at taking care of the kids than I am. I was made to go work on a team because I felt useful there. I felt better when I had somebody telling me what to do. That's how they feel. And they don't have, many of them don't have that option. Like, at least the women in our family, we are committed to homeschooling and childcare and food production, you know, for our households. Whether we feel like we're being adequately productive or not. We right. don't have the option to just go, well, that's it. I'm going to go play up to my strengths. This is I'm too weak in this area. I'm going to just go and have somebody else do this
you
job.
You do have a team. Like you sisters are in constant contact and are together all the time.
You have a team too.
You have a team too. You're not literally alone in the hospital.
You're on it right now. this is a pep talk from your teammates.
Right. Also, you have managers at the hospital and people that you're constantly meeting with online. Right. So not even counting the family team.
Right.
It's about how you look at it.
There is a, I think, I feel like we talked about this last week, but there are types of employees and there are types of jobs and all jobs don't require the same thing. Mm. And getting
oh, that's Luke. He's not here to work. We pay him for other stuff.
You're not there to cut patients open.
You're not there to sweep the floors.
You're not there to do open heart surgery. You're not there to sweep the floor.
I'd be so
you're not good there to you're not that. There to work in the cafeteria and spray off the dishes.
Mm, I miss that though.
But the people who are there, they're going to be, the people in the cafeteria, for example, are going to evaluate their success at their job differently than you're going to evaluate your success mm-hmm. because they're different jobs.
Or they're going to be miserable.
Or they're going to be miserable. They're going to say, I suck at doing this and I should change jobs.
You cannot send the women who are used to being told what to do in the hospital home to suddenly be their own managers.
Right.
They don't know how. Nobody has taught them how to manage their time. Nobody's taught them how to correctly evaluate their own worth, how to make decisions.
And again, it's rare. Most people don't have a sense of... Most people can't decide when they've done a job well and say, okay, I did that well. Most people are vexed by the nagging voice behind them that says, I should have worked harder. I should have got it done faster. I should have made it better. The American... system is built on drive, 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 drive. Go forward, go forward, go mm-hmm. forward. What do you mean? What do you mean you're knocking off? You've only been here 12 hours today. You know, you can go more. You can do more. And that is, it leads to perpetual.
I know I bring everything back to the home. I know, but I can't help it. Because
that's
because
you won't let us talk about cars and disc golf.
I don't know as much about cars, but I don't think there's a very good disc golf correlation. So I'm just going to stick with if mothers make the mistake of trying to evaluate their productivity with output, like looking at a tangible, physical, obvious list of things they can check off every day, they can and will be unhappy. And that's what happens almost every time. It's like, well, what am I doing here? I feed and clean up. I feed and clean up. I feed and clean up. I just keep loading the cannons. They spew all over the place.
There's always a pile of laundry.
It's coming out one side or the other, you know? And yes, washing the dishes, washing the laundry, and making the beds, and all for what? So we can get up again and do it tomorrow. I don't understand the purpose of all this. Right. And it goes on for years. And if they're under the impression that they will be happier with a list of things somebody else has handed them, mm-hmm. and you just go down the list and check, 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 check. First of all, you're noticing, Luke, that on that end, they're not happy either. They're not happy in the corporate world. But my only point is they won't be happier in their private life either if they're being expected to work in a management position that nobody has ever actually prepared them for, where they haven't been taught to think, is my goal all about output and productivity? And it is about productivity, but what does that mean?
What does productivity
look
like?
What am I supposed to be putting out?
What it's not about when you're talking, if we're going to keep it in the home, if you're going to make us talk about parenting and being in the home,
right?
It's not about how many hours you put in. You don't go, well, this was an excellent job. I did an excellent job of mothering.
But in one respect, your job is never done. And this is the case for him at the hospital, too. Well, he's like, I want to be able to put it down and just clock out and come home.
Right. Yes. My point is you don't measure it in terms of hours on the clock, quote unquote.
It's 24 hours on the clock because what you're needed is to be a authority figure. You're needed to be the mature, you know, mentor, a person they can rely on, somebody they can call at all hours because there's a steam emergency. Or...
At the very least, the hospital, in order to abide by the law, has to have somebody in that position.
Yes.
Right. So you're serving that purpose.
So you're already serving that purpose, even if you sleep behind your desk whole time.
That actually makes it worse.
that you're doing it because it's required by law?
because they have to have a me. Like, my position is not going to be downsized or whatever. Right. It's like, there's no, and because I'm salary instead of hourly, there's like,
you
I
have
don't
to
feel
understand.
Like I get.
Luke has had a long legacy of hourly factory workers
mentality, right?
In
right.
His, so
you trade,
in his family.
Yeah. There are people who trade hours
there's
for dollars.
No, there's, yeah, I prefer there being fruit to my obvious
that's
fruit to
not
my
what
labor.
Fruit is.
That's not what it
if
is.
If I work overtime, I get more
no,
fruit.
That's not what fruit is. You have been conditioned to be a cog in a machine, and that is not a good asset in the long run.
I know.
That's why we don't put our kids in public school, because we don't want them being trained to believe that they are just pieces of a machine
now,
that they can be plugged into.
That being said, we do need those people. Society needs people that do that. That function in that capacity, because I am not going to function in that capacity, you know, but I need somebody to do it.
Right.
Somebody has to build things. Somebody has to stand for 8 hours or 10 hours if they're going to make time and a half and put a bolt in a hole.
But that's the thing though.
Or fill up an ice cream bin.
We used to need more people like that. And then robots became a thing.
But that's still.
And now the AI idea of, software.
Right. But cheap labor is still a thing.
Do you think that we'll ever get to the point where, like, the number of people we need in development and management and things like that exceeds the number of people we actually physically need on the floor of the factory because of the machine? Like, you need more
people
repairing the machines.
No, I don't think so, because things change. Technology changes. And as the technology changes, it always creates jobs. There's always going to be people to do things. Machines are not going to be able to replace people completely. They can replace people whose job it is. I was watching video of a guy who just who just moves a bucket underneath an ice cream spigot and fills it up and then takes another bucket and does that.
That's what
yes,
I'm talking
those
about.
Jobs are going to be replaced.
I'm talking about the jobs that are that require the least human behavior or the least thought, the least mindfulness.
Well, that would be one of them.
Yes, I know. I'm saying, do you think
sort
there will
of,
be a
but see,
like I'm trying
but you've
to teach
got
our
people,
kids to think.
You've got, you know, the reason that so many things are manufactured in China, for example, is because labor is cheap. And we don't like to think about it in America. But those people make pennies a day to do exactly the sort of stuff that we're talking about replacing.
Luke wishes he could do.
Well, that Luke wants to do. But we're talking about, well, robots are going to replace it. Not in China, they're not. Why should they? Why should they replace their, when they've got somebody, when they've got legions of people who are willing to work for pennies a day and live in squalor?
Am I Israel just asking for a king? Is that what I am?
There's a chance.
Maybe.
There's
are you?
Chance.
I think so.
I am trying to teach our kids to recognize that they're value is human value. And right. I don't know how else to describe it, but you're not just a machine. You're not a robot. And if you're thinking that your job here on Earth is to do the same types of things a robot could do, then you're not thinking right. You're not thinking with kingdom mindedness. You're thinking like somebody who is educated to be a factory worker.
I think you're also undervaluing the contribution that you make when you buy aloe vera plants for coworkers and stuff. You're saying, well, that's easy to do. And just because it's easy for you doesn't mean that it's easy and doesn't mean that anybody could do it. You know, there's a certain, we've talked about this before. I don't even think about that stuff. I don't think about other people the way you think about other people.
You don't know when your coworkers' birthdays are, John?
I don't know when my coworkers' birthday are. And we got a lady at work who, her job, and she took it on herself, I think, is to put the birthday parties together every month. Whoever has a birthday,
who
for
is
that
the
month.
Person in the office who does that? Phyllis is one of them, but and then it's like all the ladies,
right,
that do birthday parties.
Well, but this is a monthly thing, and so everybody has a birthday that month. We celebrate that, and so she goes around and she asks the people whose birthday it is this month, "What do you want? What do you want for your birthday? Well, you want cookies? You want cake? You want pie? What is it you want? Just whatever you want." And then she makes sure that that is there. And a couple of months ago, it was donuts was what was selected. We want donuts. And so she went back, and one of the guys whose birthday it was, Jared, she went back and put a sign on the donuts. No, she got two of the lemon donuts out and pulled them out before anybody else got there, because she wanted to make sure that Jared got a lemon donut, because he said, I really like lemon. Because
he has no taste buds.
Mm. Well, I don't care for lemon either. You can have them all the lemon donuts.
I don't think she needed to worry about anyone else taking them.
My point is that she registered. All he did was he said, I really like lemon. Mm-hmm. And so she registered that, and not only made sure that there were lemon-filled donuts, which is disgusting, but she made sure that that was in there. But then she pulled out those donuts so that Jared was sure to get them. And I commented to her. I said, it's like my son-in-law. I said, my brain doesn't even work that way. I don't pay that much attention to what people are saying. And I certainly don't go out of my way to make sure that the birthday guy is going to get a donut. Mm-hmm. And that is a value. And even if you want to say well, that's easy, that's automatic for me. Mm-hmm. It's not easy for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't know how else to describe it. There are human traits that can't be done by robots. There are, right. I said to Joe, our brother-in-law, a few weeks ago when we were talking about systems and, you know, quality control and all the things that he can do to organize and train new
pipelines,
workflows.
I said,
Joe, I don't have a problem with organizing businesses or putting together a binder of things that need to help train the next person who's going to replace you. I said, however, on the interpersonal level, when you get down to talking directly with your fellow employees or with the people directly, you know, beneath you or your clients, that there are certain things that can't be put in a flow chart. There are certain things that can't be put in a binder. And I used the homemaker example. I said, I mean, self-help books, there's podcasts, and there's lots of tips that you could get from people who've been doing it for years and years. But at the end of the day, if you've got a mother who dies, you know, in childbirth with her seventh child and leaves behind all seven,
you can't just slap another homemaker in there.
You can't just put another woman in that spot. Right.
Well, that should at least be a page in the binder. If she dies during childbirth, this is what you do.
It should be part of the workflow.
What would you put in that binder?
Yeah. This is how we replace the peaches.
I get questions.
Mourn for 6 hours.
Yeah. I get questions regularly. You know, how did you handle this situation? I give as much information as I possibly can. Well, what if this had happened? What if it had been this thing instead? Right. Or if they had responded this way? It's like, we have now entered this level of meta that I can't follow. This web of, like, how do you make choices? And Jordan Peterson talks about this too.
Too many branches on the workflow.
They don't have general purpose robots.
You walk in the spirit.
And you never will, because they don't even know how we humans make certain decisions. We call it impulse, or we call it instinct, or we call it reflex. What the heck is a reflex? What? I think it's just something God gave us that makes us human, that we just kind of react so quickly we're not even aware of it.
Right.
And robots can't do that. And so when you're raising
people, sometimes they do
people,
it too well, and it flushes while you're still sitting there.
Nope, that's not reactive. If it were actually seeing you, it would go, I'm not going to flush yet. There's
because
a person
clearly
sitting
not finished
in front of me. But it's not. It's a machine, a dumb, humanless or mindless machine, and it can't make the same decisions that a person can. So you are a person who brings your personhood to the hospital.
There's actually no value in turning a person into basically an on-off switch.
Yep.
I don't think that would fly on a resume if I turn in a paper that just says, I'm a person.
Right.
Well, you have to, anybody who is worth their salt as an interviewer would not even ask those questions, would not even go, how are you at doing mindless, menial tasks that don't matter? You know,
are you willing to do what you're told no matter how stupid it is?
Are you willing to whip up a report that no one is going to read? If we tell you to do that, That would actually be an interesting question to ask on an interview. If we told you to write a report that we have no interest in and are not going to read, would you write it?
So that's that is the kind of question that certain savvy CEOs are starting to add to their interview process to see if you're the kind of person who's willing to intelligently talk back.
Go, why would I write a report that no one's going to read?
Well, to say something like, I could not in good conscience do something that I don't think would benefit the company. I'm here because I genuinely think that I can do something that's going to benefit the whole company. And in this case, one of the benefits that I can bring is being willing to question things that aren't working. And if I can make it more efficient, or if I can make it, if I can boost morale more, or if I can, you know, make the environment a more fun place for people to come and work, well, then I'm going to make the decision to do that because I genuinely want to succeed. And the fact that you want the whole team to succeed is a value in itself that you can put on a resume. You literally can say, hey, I am the kind of person who's going to do whatever I think is best in a particular situation to help this company, this family succeed. And that's what you're paying me for at the end of the day, I think. And if you're just paying me to do data entry, well, I may not be interested in that kind of a job because you can just hire a robot.
There's a lot of people that can do data entry.
Well, you can literally have software to do it now.
Yes.
Just set it up to do it while everybody else is sleeping, right?
We didn't get to scheduling.
That was basically what I meant by scheduling.
We decided that scheduling was not really the issue.
Oh, okay.
No.
The issue is...
I can give you practical tips on scheduling once you've decided that that is part of your human job to take care of your people.
Well, once you figure out what it is that you're trying to accomplish, then you can schedule how to accomplish it. But
or again, you can just go follow Misty Winkler.
She is such a big fan. I think I'm just going to quit.
Let's just go out and change the oil.
Thanks for visiting the Comedian's House. If you want to spend more time with our family, you can follow John Branion on YouTube and Facebook. Also, email nextdoor@johnbranion.com with your comments and questions. We'll see you next time.